from every culture
over the world
to right here
in our ports and our city,
people make
Southampton
Voice FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. From startups to established companies, I'll be bringing you a variety of guests from Southampton's business community. Now then, do you have problems setting yourself goals? Do you have problems sticking to a plan? Do you struggle with resilience? Do you give up too easily? Well, if that's you, then today's show is the perfect one for you to be listening to, because I am joined in the studio by runner and running coach, the magnificent Steve Till, who is here to tell us about his brilliant new book, The Run of Life. Steve, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much, Matt. It's great to be here and great to share an hour with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely. The feeling is totally mutual. Now then, Steve, I want to jump in because I was having a look at some of your running credentials, okay? And they are certainly impressive. I'm just going to give you some of the highlights now for the benefit of the listeners, really, because I nearly fell off my chair. So we've got competed in 100-kilometre and 24-hour events for your country. You've won medals in national championships. You've run more than 100 marathons, over 500 park runs. You're also a centurion, and you've raced walked 100 miles in less than 24 hours. What is going on?
It's the evidence of a misspent youth, Matt, I have to say.
How did you, before we talk about your amazing book, which I am currently halfway through and absolutely loving it, and before we get into the bones of the book, where did it all start for you and running and your running career? How did you get started?
Okay, it's very easy for me to identify that because I remember precisely, it was the 10th of August, okay. 1971.
Right.
I was watching the European Athletics Championships at my grandmother's house in South Wales. And I was watching, the 10,000 metres on an old black and white TV. Dave Bedford of Great Britain, who became one of my heroes, he led for the first 24 out of 25 laps, but then in the last lap he was overtaken by Juha Väätäinen of Finland and Jürgen Haase of East Germany, who ran the last lap in 53 seconds.
Oh, wow.
These European Championships were in Helsinki, and the Finn, Väätäinen, prevailed by about 2 yards. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen, and I'd watched Brazil win the 1970 World Cup, but this was even greater. And I went outside and I ran up and down the hill outside my grandmother's house.
In the back garden?
On the road, up and down the road. Because I just wanted to be part of that world, part of that amazing world of endurance and pain and fatigue and struggle that I'd just seen, you know, demonstrated. I thought it was just amazing. And I started running at that moment. That was the one point.
Brilliant. And it's such a vivid memory for you.
Yeah, I can see it now. I can see the race now. I can see me trying to run up and down this hill as hard as I could.
You are so passionate about this. I can see, for the benefits of the listeners, it's almost like we're watching the race again.
I can see it. Yeah, actually, for the listeners, if you want to YouTube European 10,000 metres, 1971, then it's a pretty impressive last lap. If you want to get inspired.
Brilliant. So you ran up and down the hill a few times.
Yeah.
And then what happened after that?
Well, I just carried on running. I'd got the bug, and I ran as much as I could, like in the evenings after school. The next year, 1972, was an Olympic year. And so I thought, well, I'm training so hard. I've got to be with a chance of a gold medal or two. Mm. I was 14 years old. You know, I was a little bit unrealistic about that, I have to say.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
But I got this passion, and I did work hard, but school sports day came round in 1972, and I came last in the 1500 metres, which was a bit of a reality check, really. Mm. Yeah, a bit of a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But I carried on, and I gradually improved, and the next year I came second at school sports day, still not, you know, Olympic standard, but second rather than last at school sports day, and I just carried on from there. And I was desperate to be as good as I could possibly be at running. I just loved running. I had no talent. I think the only talent I did have was that determination, that mindset that I was going to be as good as I could. But in terms of lungs and legs and, you know, the talent that Sebastian Coe or Steve Ovett or, you know, Paula Radcliffe has got. No, I didn't have any of that. I just worked hard.
Not naturally gifted, but no. Very much determined.
Yeah. Yeah. At university, I used to train twice a day. And I found out at one point that the rest of the university cross-country team used to laugh at me for training so much and still coming last in races.
I read that in the book. My heart sank for you, Steve.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. But in the end, I mean, I don't think any of the rest of my team back in 76 to 79 ever competed for their country. Mm. So in the end, I did sort of come out on top,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And from what I understand, your real speciality is a thing called ultra running. Now, yeah. Before you tell me why, for the benefit of the listeners, what is ultra running?
Ultra running is a term that describes any race that's more than a marathon, so more than 26.2 miles.
Oh, okay.
So it can be 50K, which is 31 miles, or up to, you know, I mean, there are 1,000-mile races, there are 3,100-mile races. But the international distances are 100K, which is 62 miles, and 24 hours.
Yep.
So run as far as you can in a day.
Yep. I mean, there's loads of these. There are different types of ultra runs.
Yep.
Some span 24 hours.
Yep.
Some are over the course of a few days.
Yep.
Spanning different continents even.
Yes, yes.
So why then? Why ultra running?
Because it's the last refuge of the untalented runner. I tried to be as good as I could be in marathon running, half marathon, 10Ks. I tried race walking. I tried decathlons. I tried triathlons. I couldn't swim, so that was a bit of a handicap there. But ultra running, I tried. And, oh, actually, I finished a bit nearer the front of the field than I did in other races.
Mm-hmm.
So the only 24-hour race I did back in the 80s, I'd come second. So I thought, here's an area of the sport where hard work and determination can make up for a lack of talent.
And also another term that you coin in the book, people that tend to do that kind of race are nutters.
Yes. I would hold my hands up and say, yes, I am a nutter. And I've met a lot of nutters over the past 40, 50 years, and most of them have turned into ultra runners.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, and I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that would probably agree with that statement. And if anyone out there at the moment is listening and they're thinking, well, what's this book got to do with business? And it's interesting because as I was reading this book, this is not just a book for runners. This is about finding one target that will motivate you, and it's about passion, and it's just all of these things that, quite frankly, I think, and we had a conversation about this earlier, this book and the advice in the book and just some of the stories that you've collated are really quite inspirational. And to be honest, they sort of apply to any walk of life. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's not just for runners. It's not just for sports people. It's for anybody who wants to get to the next level in any walk of life. And that's why the book is called The Run of Life, because it's running applied to any walk of life. Yeah, I mean, my wife and I went round the world in 1991, 92. We had a lot of time to think. I'd done quite a lot in running up to that point, but I knew I needed a new target. As soon as I thought about ultra running, and I thought, yeah, actually, they give Great Britain vests for ultra running at 100K at 24 hours. And as soon as I thought, I wonder if I could get one of those vests, a light bulb went on in my head.
Was it sort of like a fire in the belly kind of moment where it got you fired up?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I thought, yes, if I could just win one Great Britain vest, then that would, it would mean the world to me, and it would kind of buoy me up for the rest of my life, you know? So when we came back from going around the world, I thought, right, let's get a plan together. What do I need to do? What races do I need to do? What times do I need to do? And therefore, what is the training I need to do? And for the next few years, when I tried to be a Great Britain International Ultra Runner, motivation was not a problem because I knew I needed to go out and run, you know, 50 miles in a day or whatever it might be. That's 50 miles in a day. I just knew I needed to do it. If I wanted to get to that level, there was no, I don't feel like it today. I'll, you know, turn over and go back to sleep. I just needed to get out there. And so I think the overall message, one of the main messages of the book is if you can seize upon that target, that goal that sets that light bulb off in your head, that gives you the fire in your belly, then motivation really won't be a problem. I didn't enjoy running, you know, 50 miles in a day and then going out the next day and doing it again. It wasn't great. It was painful. But I knew, there was never any doubt that I was going to do it. I knew I had to do it in order to get that vest. And that's, it was out there. I could see it on the horizon. That if I just put all this training together and did the right, did as well as I could possibly do in terms of times and the distances over 24 hours, then I could possibly be in with a shout of getting in the Great Britain team.
Absolutely. Because the thing with running is there is nowhere to hide. You have to put the training in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's, there's an interesting thing here as well within the book, and it's because you only know what you know. And there are some great stories of people that throughout your own journey, they've given you some really good advice. And of course, you've also taken inspiration from other great runners out there. But I just love the way that you've managed to pull this together. And I think the story there is, you know, if you don't know something, then it's okay to seek advice.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Let's have a chat about dealing with peaks and troughs, because throughout your career, certainly your running career, and of course throughout your running coaching, I'm sure you've seen other athletes that, you know, have had to deal with, you know, exceptional form and potentially times when maybe they're not on form or they're suffering with injury. You know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question, and there's no one answer to this. You've got to keep the faith, basically. I mean, just the other day, one of the athletes I coach rang me up, and she was desperate to do a new personal best at the half marathon. And she rang me up on the Thursday before the race, and she said, "I don't think I can do this. I've just got too much on at work. I'm knackered, etc., etc." And I said, "Okay, well, let's just go through the process. You know what you need to do. You know you need to eat a certain amount on the Saturday evening. You know you need to go to bed early. You know, very. I mean, this isn't rocket science. This is basic stuff. Get up the next day, eat and drink. Get there in lots of time. You know, warm up. All the basics. But just if you go through that process, then you're more likely to stand on the start line and think, okay, I'm here. Let's have a go. Let's go and do it." Another example, I'll pull that back to another athlete, actually also going for a half marathon personal best. She phoned me up about 6 weeks before the race and said, "I'm injured. I've got this knee niggle." Mm. And I said, "Okay, all right. Well, it might still be possible." I got her to see a physio straight away. The physio said it wasn't too bad, but dialed down the distance a bit. So we changed some of the runs that I had scheduled for her to do, made the distance a bit shorter, made the efforts a bit shorter as well. We got through the next couple of weeks and the knee started to feel better. But she did really well in keeping the faith there, really, really so well. And I went to the race and watched her. And as she came through the finish line, taking 7-8 minutes off her personal best, I had something in my eye, Matt. Because she'd done so well, she'd worked so hard, but also she'd kept the faith when she could have given up.
Absolutely.
And that gets you right in the heart.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just feel amped up talking to you about this, Steve. The atmosphere in the studio is electric. And as we've said, this isn't just a book about running. That story, that applies to everything. Yep. Somebody out there might be thinking, you know, with their own business, let's say, they might be having a bit of a tough time of it at the moment. Things quite haven't gone to plan. But what we're saying here is keep the faith.
Yeah.
But also adapt the plan. Because with that athlete that you were just talking about there, you change the plan, you change things up, you move things around slightly.
Yeah.
And you can get to that goal.
Yes.
Steve, this is absolutely fascinating stuff. You'll be pleased to know that we're going to take a very, very short break. That's only part one, but listeners out there, stay tuned, because in part two, Steve is going to be reading a little bit of a section from the book, and we're going to kind of be delving into the book itself and what does it do and why did Steve, you know, write the book in the first place. We've got some really interesting chats ahead, so stay tuned. We're going to take a short break now with some music and we'll be right back.
Southampton's voice
FM.
Let's hear more from Ian at Station Motors.
I think it's important to have a family business. My customers relate to it. I've been doing cars for people and now I'm doing their son's cars. My daughter works in reception and my son's nearly a fully qualified accountant. He does my bookwork, both very good drivers. I used to walk to school past his garage. It was a petrol station back then. So I ended up buying the garage off that family, you know. So I like to think I've brought my family into that family business.
Station Motors Woolston by the Itchen Bridge.
So I got a home office in the garden. And in the spring and the autumn, it's perfect.
but in the middle of winter and summer, it's not fun. The heater costs a fortune when it's cold outside, and in the summer, opening the windows just isn't enough. Which is why I got Just Coolers to install a small air conditioning unit. It keeps me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. It's the most cost-effective way of doing it. And with a 5-year guarantee and prices from $799, what's not to like? For your free quote, just visit just-coolers.com and keep your home office just right.
Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Disconnect there by Becky Hill and Chase and Status. Welcome back. You're listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. And I'm joined in the studio by Steve Till, who is a very successful runner and running coach. And he's here to talk about his brilliant new book that he's just written and published. And it's available to buy. It's called The Run of Life. So, Steve, we are going to kick this section off by reading a little section from the book, the preface. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I think it will give the listeners an idea of what the book covers, basically.
Absolutely,
so
it's only
a minute or so.
Go for it. Fire away.
Here we go. Lying on the grassy infield of the track in lactic acid agony, having finished last in my school sports day 1500 metres, I realised my Olympic dream might be over. The gold medals at 800 metres and 1500 metres that year might just be out of reach. How could I have come up so short when I had trained so hard? Hadn't I run 4-minute miles in my back garden? I was devastated. It was 1972. I was 14 years old. Almost 25 years later, I pulled on a Great Britain vest, realising a dream slightly more realistic than the original delusion. But becoming a British international ultra runner was a good substitute and the closest I could get to those Olympic gold medals. Now, how I got from infield to international is not simple. It involved a lot of hard work, naturally. It required a radical shift of focus, and it depended on the passion for running that saw me participate in, spectate at, and cogitate about the sport almost non-stop in the intervening period. I experienced a lot, I saw a lot, I learnt a lot. And another 25 years on, I have pored over, mulled over, analysed, sifted, and filtered it all sufficiently that I finally feel able to set down my own story and the journeys of others on similar paths in a way I hope will be useful for, or at least interesting, to you. Running has given me so much, and if I can support you a little with your own running goals, sporting targets, or even life ambitions, then I will feel that I have paid back a bit of what I've received. The bottom line is, I wanted to write a book that any runner, athlete or sportsperson with even the most private, secret, modest objective could pick up and say, yeah, I felt like that, or yeah, that's a good idea, I'll try that, or oh, I never knew that, or yeah, that helps. So whether you run to live or live to run, however your life runs, you can still have the run of your life.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you very much for that, Steve. That was superb. And you mentioned there that running has given you so much. And apart from the obvious medals, the trophies, the vests, and representing, of course, GB, what else has running given you?
A lot of blisters. Yeah. A lot of black toenails. No, it's what's inside, isn't it? It's the satisfaction. It's picking a target that you think might just be out of reach, that you're not sure if you can get to, and doing all the hard work and finally achieving it. And that, I mean, I think everybody hopefully listening to this can agree with that, that if you know, the satisfaction that you get is dependent on the work that you put in.
Absolutely.
And the time that you put in. So yeah, it's that satisfaction, it's that enjoyment, it's that feeling that you get inside, and it's sharing those things with other people. It's you know, when my team won the cross country league, that's a nice feeling that you've contributed, that you've beaten a few other runners, and therefore you've scored some points for your team, all that sort of thing. But as we know, running is largely an individual sport, and it's that individual satisfaction that is really key, and that's what drives you on, and that's what, you know, gives you that warm feeling at the end of the day, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and even if you're not an athlete at the top of your game, of course, exercise, not just running, but any exercise, it's a tonic. It works wonders, doesn't it?
Of course.
If you're having a bad day at the office, you know, going for a run can sometimes help clear your head. It just gives you that bit of perspective, that sort of reflection time. Have you found that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course. There are some times when, you know, you've had a bad day at work and maybe, you know, you've got problems with the family where, you know, very little makes sense apart from going for a run. And when you go for a run or do any exercise, you go to the gym, you play a game of tennis, whatever it might be, that exercise gives you the endorphin boost that we've all heard about, that we all know about, that hopefully we've all experienced. And it kind of just settles the world down and makes you feel that, you know, life does make sense after all.
Absolutely. So why then, Steve? Why did you choose to write a book? What was the motive? What was the motivation?
Well, I've been a writer for really longer than I've been a runner. So I've been a runner for 52 years and a week. But I've been a writer for even longer. And I suppose my one remaining lifetime's ambition, once I got my Great Britain vest in 1996, my one remaining lifetime's ambition, apart from to see my kids be successful and be happy, was to write a book about running. I felt more and more as the years went on that, yes, I had got things to say about running, that I'd done a lot. I'd reached successful levels in running, and I had ideas and insights that I could impart to other people. And I felt it would be a shame if I didn't put those down in the book. And finally, after 52 years, I've succeeded in doing that, which is also a source of great satisfaction to me.
Absolutely. And in part three of this show, we're going to be talking about the publishing process. I'm sure there are people out there that potentially have a book in them, or they're maybe in the process of writing a book, or maybe just on the cusp of putting pen to paper or getting the laptop out and waxing lyrical. And we're going to be delving into the world of book publishing and some of the lessons that you've learned along the way. But before we get into that, what do you feel the book does? Because we've talked a bit about inspiration, and we've talked about, you know, giving people a bit of a blueprint if they are, you know, if they want to set themselves some new running goals and achieve those. But what do you think the book actually does?
That's a very good question, and one that's difficult to answer in a sentence or two. I suppose it's mostly about inspiration. Mm. I cannot in one book give every runner a schedule.
You mentioned that in the book, don't you? Because it's impossible. Everybody's individual.
Yeah, every runner that I coach, I sit down with each runner for up to 2 hours, usually just the first meeting, to understand not just the running they're doing at the moment and the goal that they've set themselves, but also everything else that goes on in their life. You know, if they've got you know, a busy family life, then they won't be able to train twice a day. Mm. If they're on the road with their job a lot, then they won't be able to do the same training schedule every week.
Sure.
You know, if they've got a hard manual job, that has implications for what they can do in their training. So I as their coach need to understand that in a fair degree of detail before saying, okay, this is the schedule that I would recommend that is going to get you that personal best half marathon or 10K in 6 months' time.
It's funny because there are so many parallels. I know we keep talking about this isn't just a book for runners. This is a book for, you know, any walk of life. But even, you know, my background is marketing. So if I was to work out a marketing strategy for someone, the first thing I would do is understand the current state of play.
Yep.
Similarly, if you wanted to start a business, the first thing you would do is write a business plan potentially, or come up with some sort of idea or some sort of vision.
Yep.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit about, there's a particular part in the book, I think it's on page 35, and I read that and I found that really, 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 really interesting. Do you want to do the honours and just,
sure,
and just talk through that bit, and we'll have a chat about it?
Yeah. I mean, this is part in the book where, again, I talk about goals and being an overnight success or not. So this is what page 35 says. You have to appreciate that no one is an overnight success, and that the depth of our feeling of satisfaction upon the successful achievement of our target is directly proportional to the effort, the sacrifice, and the time it took to get there. In other words, if our target is the right one, then our passion for it can carry us through. So listeners, I would set you a question, a challenge. What is your target? what is your passion? Where is your passion driving you?
Absolutely, because it's... I'm sat in the studio here, and even when I was reading the book, you know, your passion for running and wanting to achieve what you've achieved is certainly evident. And of course, it's all about setting that right target. You want, and I think you mentioned this in the book, you want to set something that pushes you outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
But isn't too easy to achieve, but isn't totally impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all heard about SMART objectives. So a SMART objective is one that is, I can't remember what the S stands for.
Specific,
measurable, achievable, results orientated, and time related. Yes, I mean the SMART acronym does vary between different business gurus, but basically, yes, an objective should be something that you could possibly achieve, but it is a stretch. I mean, Dave Bedford, who I've mentioned before, said, if I knew I could win an Olympic gold, what would be the point in going for it? If I knew it was mine, then I wouldn't bother. So it was something that was just out of reach. It remained out of reach, unfortunately, for him. But, yeah, so what you just said about it's something that you could achieve, but it's a real stretch. That is the secret, really, to set your objective out there in that space.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you for some more running stories, because I just love listening to them, and perhaps you can dig out a couple in just a moment.
Sure.
But I just wanted to touch on the way that you've structured the book. I think it's really quite unique, especially for anyone out there that might be busy and, you know, maybe can only delve into a couple of chapters at a time. It's a really interesting way you've structured the book. So chapter one, for instance, is called The End. Where do I want to get to? Chapter two is Deep. Why am I doing this? Chapter seven is, you know, Hard. You know, what do I need to do to succeed? And I think the last chapter, I think you've called it Start.
Start.
What was the thought process there in terms of the way you've structured the book? What do you want the reader to do?
I wanted it to be easy for the reader to, as you say, to dip in and out of it. Each chapter, in a way, stands on its own, but there is a flow, a narrative arc between all of them. So it does constitute one complete story. I mean, it just kind of tickled me that I called the first chapter End and the last chapter Start. That was just my little joke to myself. But yeah, so I've structured each chapter where each chapter has got a one word main title, then a question that we should all be asking ourselves as runners, as sports people, as just people in life, and then a quote that I hope engages and brings people into the subject of the chapter. So each chapter has a particular theme, but all of the themes obviously are connected.
I just want to go back as well, and thank you for that, because that makes complete sense. I just want to go back to the little paragraph we shared, and we talked about sacrifice and the time it takes to get there. Do you think sacrifice is easy if the passion is there? And if the passion isn't there, then perhaps, you know, making those sacrifices is harder.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, that is one of the main themes, one of the main lessons of the book. I mean, the book hasn't got lessons. I don't try and, you know, preach at you.
It doesn't come across that way at all. No.
Thank you. Right, yeah. I mean, it's more about ideas, some insights. You know, this worked for Sebastian Coe. It could work for you. This worked for Paula Radcliffe. I mean, I having said those two names, I think one of the main reasons why I wrote the book in the end was I felt I'd reached a reasonable level in running whilst running my own business, whilst bringing up my kids, and I felt that my story would maybe resonate more with the ordinary runner, the ordinary sports person who is just trying to get to the next level. Seb Coe, Paula Radcliffe, full-time runners, got paid for running. Obviously, the responsibilities they had are slightly different from the responsibilities I had. I didn't get paid anything for running. Believe me, there is very little money in ultra running.
Maybe a t-shirt at the end.
Maybe a t-shirt and a medal, possibly, yes, and a nice big medal at that.
Are you planning on doing any more ultras in the near future, Steve?
Well, Matt, I had a total knee replacement last November, so that is very much suck it and see. I've got to let the knee recover, which takes up to 18 months, and then I've got to see how the knee does. To be honest, at my stage of running, I've achieved all I want to in running, apart from now my goals are more quantity than quality, so I'm not going to set any more personal bests. at the age of 65. But what I might do is get to, you know, a few more park runs, a few more 10Ks, which is great. And if I can jog around the woods for a few miles, a few times a week, pain-free, then the replacement will have been worth it.
You're going for a jog this evening, aren't you?
I am going for a jog. How dare you call it a jog? It's a run, mate. It's a run. I've got a race this evening, yes. Yes.
Brilliant. Yeah, well, I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you. How
far is it?
5 miles.
Five-mile run. Mm-hmm. And what time are you expecting to do that in?
At my stage of recovery, around an hour would be fine.
Well, that's
be good. I'd be happy with that.
That's probably faster than I can do it in. So I think you're doing incredibly well. So we're going to take another short break, but don't go away, because we're going to be delving into the wonderful world of actually getting a book published. And hopefully we can all benefit from some of Steve's experience. So stay tuned.
Voice FM.
Voice FM.
Sweet Pea Florists, Bridge Road, Woolston.
Sweet Pea Florists. For all occasions and celebrations, Sweet Pea Florists.
Call Southampton 02380 433154, or visit them at sweetpeaflorists.co.uk. Flowers for all occasions,
Sweet Pea Florists.
Visit the girls in the flower shop on the corner of Bridge Road and Defender Road, Woolston.
This is the sound of exercise when it's made fun. It's called VisoSport, and it started in Southampton. You meet up, you play fun games, you exercise, you laugh, you keep fit. It's for people of all abilities. Visit visosport.net or search for VisoSport in Meetup and have fun getting fit.
From every culture
over the world
to right here
in our ports and our city,
people make
Southampton.
Voice FM.
Wow, that is a perfect track for running along to. Do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That was.
I would have preferred Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen, obviously, but I'll let you off with that one.
Apologies for that. The catalogue didn't allow.
Yeah.
That was interesting, because that was Inspire by Zodiac X. And if you like that track, you can actually head on over to the voicefm.co.uk/chart website and vote for it, which is good. South Coast Music Chart. Check it out. Now, Steve, we have talked about your motivation for writing the book. Now what I'd love to do is delve into the wonderful world of book publishing, because no doubt someone out there is thinking that maybe they might, you know, one day write a book. So you've got the book written, you've done that bit. How did you find getting it published?
Okay, I'm going to rewind a little bit and say that I've only written one book. I've only got one book published, so I can only speak about that.
Sure.
So there are three parts to it, basically.
Go for it.
Doing the writing, doing the publishing, doing the marketing. The writing, I would say everyone has a book inside them. That is what everyone says, and it is true. If you don't think you're worth a book, you are. And I would urge anybody to think long and hard about the book that they would like to write. The key, the secret, is to get the right subject. And you might think, oh, I'm gonna write about business. I'm gonna write about my sector. I'm gonna write about rugby or football or cricket or whatever it might be. But you need exactly the right angle. And if you get exactly the right subject and exactly the right angle, then the book will take on a life of its own.
Mm.
And actually writing it will be a lot easier, because your passion will carry you along, a bit like the running.
There's a bit of a repeat of the theme.
Yes. if you get as I did with the Run of Life, it took me a while at the beginning to sort out exactly how the book would work and how each chapter would work and how the overall arc of the book would fall. But having done that, then the middle 70 or 80% of writing it took on a life of its own. And I really wanted to get it done, and so therefore I would sit down every evening, I would write 1,000 words or two, you know, and the book, the majority of the book was written in a couple of months, really.
Oh, wow.
So that's on the writing side. On the publishing side, again, this is just my experience. There are broadly three ways of getting a book published. You are picked up by a publishing house,
mm-hmm.
which for someone like me is unlikely. Now, if Mo Farah writes a book, or Sebastian Coe writes a book, they're going to be fighting the publishing houses off. But for someone like me, who is unknown, then I'm unlikely to get a publishing deal up front. Obviously, I'm hoping for one for my second book.
Absolutely. any publishing houses out there?
Okay, so having put that to one side, you can do what is called hybrid publishing, where you pay a publishing house an amount of money, and they will publish it for you, and they will do a lot of the work for you. But you lose a certain amount of control there. So the path I went down was self-publishing. So, again, I paid an amount of money to a publisher consultant who knew all of the intricacies of the publishing process that I had no idea about. The ISBN numbers, the how to get it onto Amazon, how to get it into Waterstones, how to get the cover design done, how to get the interior design done, how to get it all put together and published, and all of the things that I knew nothing about. They took care of all of that, and obviously I had to pay them for that. But I retained complete control over the book, which is great. So that's the path I went down. So that's the publishing side of things. Mm. The marketing side of things will entirely depend upon what your book is about. But I myself am doing ads on Facebook, ads on Amazon, and trying to get the word out as much as I can to the running community and beyond that here is a book that you might be interested in.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because you said, you know, you need to sort of ask yourself the question, who could promote me?
Yep.
Who could promote this book? And what was that as an exercise? Because that was something that you sort of asked yourself.
Yeah, it's quite difficult because I think with most of us, our natural modesty kicks in and you think, oh, I can't possibly ask that person or that group or that community to promote the book. But you'd be surprised that people are interested.
People want to help, don't they? Most people want to help.
Yeah.
You promoted the book at a park run recently,
yes.
Didn't you? How was that?
Yeah, that was great. And I was very pleasantly surprised by the reception I got. My local park run, I asked them if it would be possible for me to say a few words at the briefing about the book. And they said, yeah, great, go for it. And so I did. And everyone was very interested. I know that quite a few people who were there on that day have bought the book because they've come along to a park run since and asked me to sign the book. So that's great. And if I can reach out to a few more people in that way, you know, it does the heart good, doesn't it?
Well, I'm rather hoping you can sign my copy today.
Well, obviously, that will be at a fee.
quite right. Out of interest, Steve, how many copies do you get for yourself?
Well, it's up to you. You can order a certain number. I got 100 copies, because obviously I've got 100 very close friends. No, I got 100 copies. Obviously, I gave, you know, one to each of my children and other close friends and everything. I also retained a few to send out to people who I thought might be interested in it, people who are mentioned in the book, running magazines, athletics magazines, those sort of, that might review the book. So I think it's a good idea to do your own marketing in that way, because obviously I'm fairly well connected in the running world, so if somebody gets a package from me, hopefully they'll be kindly disposed towards it, at least look at the book, look at the letter, and maybe review it or put it on their social media, whatever is the appropriate thing for them to do.
Yeah, all the kind of running magazines and the online publications, do they review books?
Yep.
Well, that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Get them to review it.
Absolutely, yeah.
5 stars from me. Steve, let's have a little chat about a thing called imposter syndrome, because we were sort of talking about that earlier, and that was something that you suffered a little bit with, you know, why should someone like me write a book?
Yeah.
That's what you said.
Yes.
You know, what would you say about that? What advice have you got for anyone that may be in that situation?
I would say have a really good hard think about it, because I thought for a long time I wasn't worth a book. And I actually talked to a personal counsellor about it and worked with her through over quite a number of weeks, working on sort of where my passion for running had come from, working on my self-image, self-esteem. Mm. And in the end, I thought, actually, I don't know anybody else who has run for Britain, run 100 marathons, run 500 park runs, is also a centurion, which is walking 100 miles in less than 24 hours. I don't actually know of anybody else in the world who has done those four things. And also has the ability to, and has been a running fan and a running coach for the last goodness knows how many years, and can write about all of that. So actually, perhaps I am in a fairly unique position in which to impart some of that knowledge, some of those insights, some of those ideas to the wider running community. And it took me a long time to reach that conclusion. I thought, yes. But once I had reached it, yes, I was convinced. And I was convinced that I really ought to. Not that I would like to, but I ought to write a book.
You owed it to yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's, so that in itself is an inspiration. And I think people out there, you know, will be thinking, actually, yeah. Because when you look back at the context and everything you've achieved, you sort of think to yourself, crikey, yeah, that is totally book worthy. But at the time, before you'd gone through that process of almost sort of like geeing yourself up, to think, well, actually, I have got the credentials. I have actually got some really useful information and advice that people might find useful.
Yeah.
Until you go through that process, you probably, sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees, can you?
Absolutely, yeah. It's good to step back and think, yeah, actually, I've got something to say here.
So if you were sat opposite somebody right now, that are perhaps considering writing a book, they're thinking about it, what would you say to them? What advice would you give them?
I would ask them what they're going to write about, mm-hmm. and then I would dig down into that subject matter and say, okay, what are you going to say that is different from what other people have said? And what is your unique angle? You know, what have you done differently in this area from other people? How can you make this book stand out? Because everyone is different, everyone is unique, every person is unique, you know, by definition. So everyone has a unique story. But it's a matter of identifying that, of defining it and bringing it out in the book and making the book really kind of resonate with that uniqueness.
That's so true, isn't it? We were just talking in the break about a couple of stories that are within the book. Can you just share one of those with us, the one we were just talking about?
Yeah, the James Guy one.
Yeah.
So James Guy is a swimmer, and he won a couple of gold medals in 2021, Olympic gold medals. And it'd taken a while to do that. I saw a story about him that when he was quite young, he won the Sports Personality Award for Warrington, which is where he lived. And at the sports awards, the host asked him what training he did, and he said, well, 3 mornings a week I get up at 4, I eat my breakfast in the car, I swim for 2 hours, and then I go to school. And there were gasps from the audience because he was 11 years old at the time, and that shows that not many people are an overnight success. It took him, you know, a long time, a lot of years and a lot of miles in the pool to get to those 2 Olympic gold medals.
Absolutely. And there's another athlete that you mention in the book, because and it's a very powerful story about it having to be your own choice. And I can't remember the athlete's name. I'm hoping that you remember the story I'm referring to.
This is another swimmer. There was a documentary on TV about her a long time ago. And I can't remember her name, but actually her mother was interviewed, and she said, well, what we do is her alarm goes off. She was like 14 at the time, and, you know, trying to get in the Olympic team, trying to build up her success in the pool. And she said her alarm goes off and she comes and gets me up, her mother. And the mother gets up and goes and makes breakfast and everything, and the girl goes back to bed for another quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, and then comes down for breakfast. And the interviewer said, why do you do it that way? And the mother said, because it's got to be her choice. It's got to be her decision to do this, her sacrifice. So that's why it's her alarm that goes off. She gets up first, she comes and gets me up, and then the day unfurls from there.
I think that's such a such an important lesson, isn't it, in life, really?
And if it doesn't come from in there, within yourself, it's not going to work.
No, it's not, is it? You need, like you say, you need that passion, you need that sort of fire in your belly, that determination to kind of, as we've said, carry you through. What's next for Steve then?
Well, obviously, book number 2. In terms of running, as I said, I'm going to see how the knee works out. I'm mad keen, obviously, to get back to running. I mean, I am running bits and pieces, and you know, just see how fast a 65-year-old with a bionic knee can get. So that's on the running side of things.
And what about the coaching? Are you still coaching?
Still coaching, yeah, yeah. And I've got athletes who have all sorts of targets. I've got one young lady who's going for an Ironman triathlon. She's in the early stages, so she knows that won't happen for a couple of years. So the plan is to work through the Olympic distances and half Ironman next year to tackle the full Ironman distance in 2 years' time. So, yeah, all that sort of thing. That really keeps me motivated when I see other athletes, other sports people, you know, doing that kind of thing. And it's great for me to play a small part in helping them get there.
Absolutely. Do you think book number two, will it be a follow-up to this or will it be something completely different?
I think there's all sorts of ways in which I could go. Maybe a book that concentrates on the ultra running side of things, because more and more people are doing ultras, particularly on the trails. So it'd be good maybe to do that, because not many people have done there and literally got the T-shirt. I have been there and I have a few insights that I could share with other ultra runners, aspiring ultra runners. So maybe that would be a way to go.
Oh, for anyone out there that's listening, definitely buy the book. It is a great read. But just the way that, Steve, you've managed to bring together all of these different stories, because it's not just about your experience. You're actually lending experience of other athletes, other people out there. How long did it take to sort of collate all of these amazing stories? Because they fit together so well.
I've been an athletics fan for 52 years, as I said, from 1971. And because I'm fascinated by it, I have collected newspaper clippings and articles from running magazines, and I've got them all in a file. So I look back at all of them. I mean, a lot of them are in my head anyway. So I look back at all of them, and I got the best ones, and I put them all in the book. Because the book isn't just about me. It's about lots of stories, lots of people who have faced obstacles, faced difficulties, faced challenges, overcome them and achieved, well, their mountaintop.
Oh, well, on that note, Steve, we're pretty much out of time. Can I just say, though, thank you. Firstly, thank you very much for coming into the studio today. It's been brilliant talking about the book, and I hope you've enjoyed being in the studio today.
I have. It's been great. Thank you, Matt.
Brilliant.
It's been a great opportunity.
Well, you never know. Once you get book number two sorted, we'll get you back in, and we can talk about that, can't we?
That'll be lovely.
Well, look, I'll be back again next week with another exciting guest. You've been listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. Bye for now.
Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes. And don't put in your recycling bin dirty tins and dirty plastic bottles.
If any of your recycling is dirty, greasy or wet, your whole bin could be rejected. So follow this golden rule. Keep your recycling clean, dry and loose. And remember,
don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes.
This message is supported by Voice FM. And if you want to know more about recycling in Southampton, visit voicefmradio.co.uk/recycling.